When you need mealtime inspiration, it's worth shopping Kroger, where you'll find over 30,000 mouthwatering choices that excite your inner foodie. And no matter what tasty choice you make, you'll enjoy our everyday low prices, plus extra ways to save, like digital coupons worth over $600 each week. You can also save up to $1 off per gallon at the pump with fuel points. More savings and more inspiring flavors make shopping Kroger worth it every time. Kroger, fresh for everyone. Fuel restrictions apply.
Mother's Day is around the corner. Find the perfect gift for the mom in your life with a stunning piece of jewelry from Blue Nile. From timeless pearls to dazzling gemstones, Blue Nile has something she'll adore. Need it fast? Most items can ship overnight. Plus, enjoy guaranteed free shipping and returns. Don't miss our special Mother's Day deals. Save big on the season's most beautiful trends. For a limited time, get up to 50% off by going to BlueNile.com. That's BlueNile.com.
With Lucky Land Slots, you can get lucky just about anywhere.
Dearly beloved, we are gathered here today to... Has anyone seen the bride and groom?
Sorry, sorry, we're here. We were getting lucky in the limo and we lost track of time.
No, Lucky Land Casino, with cash prizes that add up quicker than a guest registry.
In that case, I pronounce you lucky.
Play for free at LuckyLandSlots.com. Daily bonuses are waiting. No purchase necessary. Void where prohibited by law. 18 plus. Terms and conditions apply. See website for details.
This podcast is part of the Sports Social Podcast Network. This podcast is part of the Sports Social Podcast Network. This podcast is part of the Sports Social Podcast Network. This podcast is part of the Sports Social Podcast Network. This podcast is part of the Sports Social Podcast Network. This podcast is part of the Sports Social Podcast Network. This podcast is part of the Sports Social Podcast Network.
Mobile phone companies say they offer home internet. But if their internet comes from a cell phone network, you should know. It's just phone internet, not home internet. Keep your home up to speed with Cox. Cox Internet is faster and has more reliable download speeds than 5G home internet. Cox is the real home internet you're looking for. Based on Cox analysis of Ookla speed test intelligence data, Q3 2022, and Cox serviceable areas, visit cox.com/internet for details.
Celtic State of Mind. I'm Paul John Dykes. I'm joined by Colin Watt, and we were just having a wee conflab before going live unexpectedly. I'm just so concerned that we don't go to 12:31 on a Monday without going live. Colin Watt, how are you, my friend?
I'm doing good. Good to be back on a Monday.
It is.
So everybody's feeling a bit down today because it's the first day back for a lot of people since the Christmas holidays. I know, Paul, you don't know
what Christmas
holiday is. but yeah, certainly for a lot of people it will be. But hopefully we'll cheer you up over this next hour or so.
Absolutely, yeah, because we're going to be talking about VAR. There's loads to discuss after the weekend's action. Celtic initially going 12 points clear, but that was cut back to 9 points, virtue of a 2-0 win at Tannadice, where VAR was in the spotlight again, with handballs in the box by that man Goldson. Unbelievable, but we'll be coming back to that. We'll talk about our action first, Colin, and I'm pretty sure handballs and consistencies and everything else will be discussed during the next hour. We'll also be talking about transfers and ins and outs. Look at that tagline, Giakoumakis out, Cho Gwee-sung in. That's what appears to be happening. We've already got a replacement in for Juranovic. Colin, we'll talk about the players individually, but is there a sense of surprise when you look at some of the transfer fees that have been quoted for Juranovic and Giakoumakis?
I think there is, especially when you look back to the same people that's reporting this news today that reported it back in the summer, when they were talking about how bids were starting at £15 million for Josip Juranovic in the summer, but now, 6 months later, it's down to half of that. So I'd be intrigued to find out why that happened or how that happened, especially after the fact that he became a World Cup semi-finalist. You'd think, if anything, that was going to increase his value, but obviously something going on behind the scenes. For Giakoumakis, it's an interesting one. Again, he's someone who's at the stage of his career where this next move is probably his last move or his last big move. And for me, the fact that he's looking at going to places like Japan, that really surprises me. I thought he'd like to go somewhere that would challenge himself, especially when the fact that he made the move from Venlo to Celtic, you're thinking, right, well, your next sort of stepping stone from there, maybe looking at the English Premier League, one of the big five leagues in Europe. Mm. It's a real surprise that he's looking to make that move out to the Far East, although I wonder how much of an influence Ange has had in that. I don't think it's necessarily a fallout between Ange and the player. I just think it's a fallout between the player, his agent, and the club at not getting the contract that he's looking for. So, it's interesting to see how this goes, but I would say if you're looking at it for the fees, not ideal, to be perfectly honest, but we've shown, and Michael Beale will disagree, that even on a small budget, you can turn around that £7 million and bring in three or four quality players. Just because we're shopping in a different market to what they are doesn't mean that £7 million isn't going to go out and bring us in two or three quality players that can extend that gap that we've got with them.
Yeah, I don't know how accurate the fees are. Obviously, like you say, we're going to wait and see until the deals are done. We'll be talking about the players individually, but how can you gain Champions League and World Cup experience in Juranovic's case and your value go down? That doesn't make sense. How can Giakoumakis's value only be around the £6 or £7 million mark when he is playing at the top level of European football in the Champions League? Yeah, he's not getting a game at the moment for Celtic, but he's got a fantastic record, Colin, you can't take away from him. And surely a player isn't so desperate to leave that they would go to, I'm not going to say a step down by going to a different division. There's other teams involved in the race for Giakoumakis. Sampdoria, for example, have been quoted this morning in the Greek press as being interested in Giakoumakis. If he's going to leave, and I've already said I don't want him to, but if he is going to leave, then ideally you want two or three clubs to be in a fight for him to push that transfer fee up. I didn't think there'd be any issue with the transfer fee for Juranovic. The only niggling suspicion I have is that there might be a transfer clause in there when he signed for Celtic. And if that's the case, Colin, you're then asking yourself, do Legia Warsaw have a sell-on fee? And then you're not really making a great deal of money out of a player who starred at the World Cup.
No, what's quite interesting as well is when you look at it, he'll have spent the exact same amount of time here at Celtic as what he has done at Legia Warsaw. So he does seem to be someone who is always thinking of his next step ahead. I know if you look back at his career, the most amount of time he spent was when he was at Hajduk Split, mm-hmm. When he was there for about 3 to 4 or 5 years. Look, he's obviously someone who's got a bit of ambition, but I don't know if Monza necessarily is that right ambition for what he has. He obviously knows that he's going to be the right back for Croatia going forward. I would have thought that when you look at the kind of clubs that are interested in you, if you're sitting listening to it and you're hearing the likes of, I mean, Barcelona were definitely in the mix. There was talk of Chelsea, there was others. And then the next thing he turns around and goes, I'm going to go to Italy and I'm going to go to Monza. Something just doesn't seem right about that. But look, it's up to these. I mean, we've seen it with Tom Rogic there in the summer, how he ended up at West Brom. That man deserves a far better team than West Brom, but these players are going to make their decisions. We've got to enjoy them while they're at Celtic, and then after that, then it's up to them.
Yeah, it is. And there are choices out there, Colin, both football and non-football, that don't always work out for the player. Our concern is always with Celtic and what's best for us as a club. I found it also interesting that there was talk of Monza coming in with a loan to buy deal. I thought that was pretty bizarre, because then it would suggest that we've brought in his replacement thinking that a deal was lined up elsewhere, you know, because I don't see that really working for Celtic. Obviously, we don't want to have three right backs at the club. That's not ideal, and we don't want to play Juranovic at left back after his Ibrox showing. But the loan to buy thing made me wonder, was there a deal maybe lined up and it's broken down? It'll all come out in the wash, as they say, Colin. We'll be talking about the Kilmarnock game just passed with a view to Kilmarnock at the weekend again. And we're welcoming some of the regulars, Jungle Lion, all the way from Dublin. Afternoon to you, sir. Always an absolute pleasure to see you in the YouTube comments. Jake, feel the JJ deal is robbery and we should force the player to stay until a decent offer comes in. However, as long as Ange gets backed either way, I'm not too bothered. You get into that niggly bit though, Colin, don't you? When you hear the cliches, the heads turned, the heads out the door, all that stuff. But it is true. You know, we've seen that with some of the players who had a wee bit too long a stay at Celtic in Neil Lennon's final season. You know, because if the 100% commitment and focus isn't with Celtic, it does show in the performances. Mm. It absolutely does. There was a suggestion that Juranovic's performance against Rangers had elements of that in it. Who knows? I mean, we're obviously just looking at performance, looking at the scenario and coming up with that as a conclusion. But I would much rather, if the player is not happy, and this is where I'm kind of accepting of Giakoumakis' move, if the player's not happy, you're best to get them out of there.
I think, yeah, in that sense, because when you look at it, we've not necessarily been shy in the transfer market. We are actively always looking to replace people. Maybe a couple of years ago, when, like, for the likes of, and we say this now, but he's obviously came on to be a fantastic player for us since. When we were replacing Kieran Tierney, we were looking at someone who was a 10 for that value at the time. Mm-hmm. And we're saying, well, that's not really progressive of us. We should have invested that and brought in a quality player to continue that sort of run in Europe that we were getting to when Kieran Tierney left. And obviously Greg Taylor's his replacement. And to be fair to Greg Taylor, it has taken him a couple of years, but he has really, really proved himself at Celtic. And he will be a sort of bigger loss in the long term, depending on how long he's out injured. Hopefully it's not for too long. But at that time, when you kind of lost players, you're thinking, we're not going to replace like for like, or we're not even going to replace anywhere near like for like. So you'd have rather held on to them and seen their contracts out at points because you knew they were still going to get a performance out of them. The fact that Ange is already actively looking at the progression of Celtic and actively looking at, right, this player's going to go in 6 months, I'm going to get this player in now, I'm going to bed him in 6 months' time when this player leaves, we've already got someone in there. That sort of thing doesn't happen at Celtic that often. It certainly hasn't in my time watching Celtic. It's always been a sort of firefighting to try and replace mm-hmm. the people that were carrying us. I mean, the prime example of that was when we knew Henrik Larsson was leaving, we didn't bring a replacement in. We waited until late in the summer window and brought in Henri Camara on loan. It's not like Celtic to actively future plan, but now we've got Ange in. That's exactly what we're doing just now. Yeah. You take a look at these guys. Especially you're talking about Cho Ju-young, you're talking about even Ayawata and these players. A lot of them only have 2-3 years senior pro experience. A lot of them have played for their sort of college teams, their university teams. Some of them, especially Cho, I know played for his military team. He had to go and do his military service. Mm. A lot of them haven't played a lot of senior football. But the fact that we can bed them in with a team that's been successful in the park like Celtic are just now means that in that year or 18 months from now, when they are kind of up to the level, then they're ready to take over from whoever's playing just now. So it is really good forward planning. It's just a case of we've got to accept that if someone doesn't fit into that and doesn't fit into Ange's model, then we maybe not get what we think we're going to get for them. But Ange will just take them out the door as soon as possible.
Cycles, isn't it? It really is. Juranovic, for me, if he leaves for £7 million, I'm going to be asking questions around the makeup of the deal. Was it a clause in the contract? Because, you know, the chat around his transfer fees, valuation, and these things fluctuate, Colin. But in terms of someone playing at that level, winning a bronze medal at the World Cup, coming back, Champions League experience, you know, you do look at that and think you would be hard done by. We actually ran a show just last week talking about the fact that we can't be short-changed on these two deals. So we'll wait and see what happens with them before we make any more comment on it. But I will be disappointed.
You take a look at it, Paul, right? So obviously we're talking maybe a total of £15 million for the two of these guys. Now, as you say, you could look at it as being short-changed. But then what will £15 million in Ange Postecoglou's budget do?
Well, you know, exactly. You can use it well, but I still look at it and think £5 million profit on each of the players when you could be making a hell of a lot more than that.
Well, I don't understand that, but I think if we continue to...
We need to be bold. We need to be strong in the market. In that respect.
You look at the other players that have been potentially linked to moves away just now, like Tyson Maeda was in the papers yesterday. I think it was, what, £10 million potentially for Southampton. I would say Celtic would knock that back because he's part of the team and we've not got a like-for-like replacement in there yet. Mm. As you say, it's all about cycles and getting people in and out. But, I mean, for me, if you gave Ange Postecoglou £15 million, he could bring in almost a full team and it could be as successful as the team we've got in the park just now. You take a look at some of the signings where you're talking, what, £1 million for Matt O'Reilly, you're talking the same for Dyson Maeda, Hatate, a couple hundred thousand pounds. We've got the J-League Player of the Year for about £1 million in Iwata. So,
and the K-League's top goal scorer potentially for £3 million.
Yeah.
I thought Jakimakis and Juranovic were good deals. Like 2.7 for Juranovic, 2.5 for Jakimakis. I thought it was fantastic. But you are looking to more than double your money on these, particularly if the selling club, the initial selling club, have got a clause, a sell-on clause. So we will see. But you're right in what you say. If you give Ange the money, then he will be able to, he will be able to find players. Last week we spoke, Colin, about the kind of lost millions on Boyata and Cham and Craig Gordon when there were big bids on the table, we didn't take them. And it's, £26 million, I think it was, for the three players. And we didn't get a penny for any of the three of them at the end. So I get what you mean. You cash in, particularly on Jakimakis, if his head's not in it. Juranovic, maybe he's checked out. You know, we're making conclusions based on appearances in Juranovic's case. But like you say, if the money comes in, you would trust that Ange has lined up, able replacements, people who can come in. Not just like we're not just buying for the here and now, like you say, it's no short termism. We're buying players just now. We're preparing the squad for the Champions League, hopefully, exertions next season. And that's something that we haven't had the luxury of for a long time.
No, and then you take a look at our kind of sort of previous record in the transfer market, and that's still hindering us as well. Because we've got players that are part of the squad just now that are maybe out on loan at other teams. Guys like Albin Ayeti, Vasilis Barkas. I mean, that's £10 million there on just two players that we're speaking about.
I know.
And we said at the time, that's the kind of market we want to be shopping in. We want to be shopping in the sort of £5, £6 million market. We've been proven so wrong in that case.
Mobile phone companies say they offer home internet. But if their internet comes from a cell phone network, you should know. It's just phone internet, not home internet. Keep your home up to speed with Cox. Cox internet is faster and has more reliable download speeds than 5G home internet. Cox is the real home internet you're looking for. Based on Cox analysis of Ookla Speedtest Intelligence data, Q3 2022, and Cox serviceable areas, visit cox.com/internet for details.
It's the Marketer's Report. This week, Patrizia Spagnoletto, Global Chief Marketing Officer, Direct-to-Consumer for Warner Brothers Discovery, weighs in on the difficult task of building and retaining consumer trust.
Trust is a really hard thing to build and a really easy thing to destroy, and we have to be very respectful about that. Our partnership with iHeart has really helped us build that trust and that relationship with the on-air talent. The best thing for us to do is to build a relationship with our consumers. And if those consumers have a relationship with the DJs that are on air, then we want to build on that. House of the Dragon, which was one of our most successful, if not the most successful campaign we've ever done for a show, audio was a core part of that.
As the number one audio company, iHeartMedia gives you access to all. Every audience, live conversations, trusted influencers, and the insights and data you need to grow. Not just a media company, iHeartMedia is your access company. Go to iHeartResults.com for more.
Because we don't need to compete in that market to bring a quality player in. It's all down to your scouting system and actually identifying players that suit the system that Celtic was trying to play. A Yeti was never going to suit a Neil Lennon style of football. Barkas, whether it's a confidence thing, he seems to be doing quite well out on his loan spell. You take a look at it and there's other players that we've sort of brought in for that sort of money that somehow we've managed to make our money back on.
You're thinking of Klamala, £3 million.
So we've made mistakes in that market before. And I'd rather make a mistake in a £1 million market than a £5, £6 million market because that money's harder to get back.
It is. And when Andrew's gone into that kind of level in terms of finance, you know, £4.5 million for Starfelt, Kyogo, he's bought well. £6 million for Jota and Carter Vickers, he's bought well. So you're right, we have made big mistakes in the past when it comes to big money signings. It's not always about the transfer fee. I don't want us to be shortchanged. We'll find out in the fullness of time if that's going to happen. But obviously, we have got reinforcements coming in. Should Giakoumakis leave the building? And the second part of Jake's point is Giakoumakis is okay, but definitely think there's better out there. Happy to sell him and bring in someone else and take the risk that the replacement is an upgrade. You know, I actually think, right, you know, what Jake's saying there, I actually think there's better in Giakoumakis than what we've seen, Colin. And what I mean by that is he comes into the side as a new signing and he doesn't hit the ground running. A lot of Angie's signings have done. Giakoumakis didn't. He was unfit. When he comes into the side, he's in and out until he establishes himself. And in this season, as we've seen, he's been getting 10, 12 minutes here and there. I think he's only played 490 minutes this season. So I don't think we've seen the best of him. And again, that's a bit of a frustration for me because, as I was saying at the weekend with Laura and Kevin McCluskey, I think that, you know, watching Giakoumakis over a full campaign with no injury issues, Colin, I think we'd see the true value of him. We've not seen that yet, I don't think.
I think one of the things you've got with that, though, is the reason that Giakoumakis got that run in the team last year was due to the injury to Kyogo. Mm-hmm. I mean, it's very clear that Kyogo is Ange's first choice. When fit, whenever available, he'll be the one that comes into the team. Now, you can see this season he's starting to repay that. Yes, we could go on and on about some of the chances that Kyogo misses. As I said last Tuesday when I was on, I think if Kyogo scored every chance that he got, he wouldn't beat Celtic. Someone would have snapped him up by then. He'd have moved on to a bigger team. And that's not necessarily a slight on Celtic, but it is the reason why we've got someone of that quality here. Whereas Giakoumakis, when he's sort of had his 15, 20 minute spells, it's not like he's came on and he's changed the game necessarily. He's not been one of those ones where you thought, you know what? Yeah, we'll start him next week because he's the one that sort of won us that game. And I don't know if it's the fact that he maybe just needs that run and we're not giving him it. I can't quite work him out. He is a great option as part of the squad. But obviously at his age, I can see why he doesn't want to just be an option. He wants to be the main guy. Mm-hmm. Again, you look back at his career and you take him right up to that one season at Venlo where he got, was it 27 goals? Everything before that was just sort of bit part player here and there. Mm-hmm. He has shown that when he's given the chance to lead the line, he can put the ball in the back of the net, as he has done for us last season and for Venlo the season before. And that probably makes sense why he wants to move on if he's not going to be the number one here. He's kind of come in, he's put his effort in, he's tried to dislodge Kyogo. Kyogo's obviously backed himself this season and he scored more goals this season than what he did last. So it's very difficult, and if he's not up for continuing to play second fiddle, then fair play to him to move on. And I think that's why you see Ange's like, great, okay, we'll get someone else in.
Mm-hmm. Ah, for sure. And we don't know, obviously, what the attitude's like in the training park, in the dressing room. These are things that we have got to take into account. When the news broke that there was interest in Giakoumakis from clubs over in Japan, obviously the first thing we do is we ask Liam Carrigan about the club, their finances, what kind of spending power they have. So as well as Sampdoria, as has been reported today, Urawa Red Diamonds over in Japan are interested in Giakoumakis. RR clubs in Russia and Germany. Now, that's according to the Greek publication SDNA. They're talking of £6 million. As I say, I think that's underselling. But I was asking Liam, our Japanese resident, if there is money within that club. He says there is. It's not unheard of for clubs in Japan to spend £5-6 million on a player, although it's unusual, although not unheard of. And I was also asking, what about a player plus cash deal? And that was before Cho Gyu-sung came back into the reckoning. And there was no one obvious within that squad who he thinks would benefit Ange Postecoglou's team. So we'll wait and see what happens with Giakoumakis. I think he would leave with most of our best wishes. Paddy Lavery comes in once again. Afternoon to you, sir. Always good to see you on the YouTube chat. Lindsay, afternoon from South Yorkshire. We have people tuning in from all over the globe. It's great to see. Michael Ross, hail, hail, my fellow Celts. Hope you're all warm, well and happy. What else do you need, really? Come on, that's what it's all about. And the Urban Culture, good day to fellow Axum addicts. Tip for the day is don't buy Scottish newspapers, get your Celtic news on here. We'll come back to that one because we're going to be talking about the furore that has rolled on since, in fact, before the Celtic Rangers game in relation to officials in Scotland. Michael Ross, sad to see Giakoumakis go. His goal secured the title last year, so I wish him well. This is the thing, we don't really have any bad blood with him. We've had that in the past, calling with strikers or some players who have come in and it's been obvious that we've been stepping stone, they've used us, they're mercenaries, they're badge kissers, all of these things. I think Giakoumakis has always given his absolute all. I like his attitude. I like the fact last season when he came out and he was brutally honest, remembering the presser. I actually thought I was good. Some people didn't like it. I thought it was fine. I like a bit of confidence and self-belief. I've always enjoyed that. Will he go on to bigger and better things elsewhere? I'm not so sure. I think you made the point there with regards to Venlo, VV Venlo, Colin. Prior to that one season where, by the way, he was on every spot kick and all the rest of it, but prior to that season, he had scored something like 30 to 35 senior goals, career goals, and then he has a purple patch. Follows it up with a consistent season, prolific season last season. He might go to a team where they're not creating the chances that we create, Colin. You know, it's not every striker that gets four or five chances in a game. But when you come to Celtic, you can. And that's why we've brought in strikers in the past who have shown promise for the likes of Motherwell, for example, and have ended up scoring 30 goals a season for Celtic because we create so many chances. So he might not have that luxury. Is he looking at his international career and thinking, well, I need to play first-team football? Loads of different things to consider here. But for sure, we will wish him all the best. I don't think he's going to be leaving under a cloud or any of that kind of stuff. I'm not going to hold his egg timer against him on social media, Colin. But before we move on to Juranovic and other matters involving Celtic, a couple of ex-Celts to talk about. First one, Scott Brown, the Bruni. So, as you will know, he is at Fleetwood and he's looking great. You know how sometimes managers, sometimes managers go in the dugout, Colin, they're no training day to day. Scott Brown is aging like a vintage wine, a fine wine. He's even grown in the mop and everything. Not sure if I'm used to that yet. Anyway, Fleetwood beat QPR, who were a division above them, beat them in the FA Cup. And then yesterday there was the draw and they have been tied away to fellow League One club Sheffield Wednesday. Are you watching Bruni with interest? Is it something that, you know, I've heard some people on Axum saying once they're gone, they're gone. I've got to say it. I am. I've got an eye on Bruni. I want to see him doing brilliantly down there.
I'd like to see him do well. I know that having watched some of his games this season, I don't know if you particularly saw the outburst from Sean Rooney a couple of weeks ago.
I did.
I don't think that And say I say I don't think that had a lot to do with Scott Brown. That is a typical Scott Brown thing for about 10, 15 years ago, but not the Scott Brown of nowadays. But if you haven't seen it, you'll try and find it somewhere on Twitter. His reaction and his back and forth with Gordon Duncan from Super Scoreboard was something to behold as well. Poor Gordon was making a
joke. He took it tight.
He was only making a wee joke, and Sean was clearly still raging at being sent off that day, but I think they've since apologised. But no, it's good to see him doing well. Sitting sort of mid-table, I think Fleetwood are relatively happy with how he's been since he came in. It's his first managerial job, and that is always difficult at first when you come in to try and make that move from being the player to being the manager. We've saw it for a number of different people that have struggled in that sense, but no, I think Scott's building a good squad down there. I think if they give him some time and they give him some backing, he can definitely get them out of that league. Mm-hmm. As for the next round of the Cup, coming up against Sheffield Wednesday, I think it was Josh Windass that got the two goals for Sheffield Wednesday the other day as well. So you've got that sort of Glasgow derby input to that as well. But no, good luck to Scott. It's always good to see fellow Celts doing well, especially someone who was an absolute, well, as they say, leader, legend, captain for Celtic for such a long period of time. So, yeah.
Absolutely. Yeah, he's in the 500 club. You know, when I was watching that Sean Rooney incident, and people were saying, oh, it's classic Rooney, I thought Rooney was more controlled with his aggression. I thought Rooney had a control about him. You know, that he wasn't kicking off. I mean, you're going to tell me an instant where he did kick off now. But when people were saying that, I mean, Rooney completely lost it. Right. And by the way, he's not on my Twitter, so I know he's not going to react to it. He's not got a clue who I am. But I mean, he's a Celtic fan, isn't he, Sean Rooney? Yeah. And obviously his granddad was Benny Rooney, right?
Yep.
Who started his career off at Celtic, went to Greenock Morton, made a name for himself at Morton, ended up managing Morton with Mike Jackson and the team that had Andy Ritchie in it and others. But his dad, so Benny Rooney's dad, Bob Rooney, he was the, and I'm inverted commas, physiotherapist to the team that won the European Cup in 1967. Physiotherapy back then was a heat lamp, apparently. And I always giggle at the stories that I get told by the ex-players. Tommy Callaghan, Tid, saying that he had a really bad leg injury, so he's up on the treatment table and, you know, he's got this heat lamp out, he says, and he thought it was getting a bit hot, but it wasn't the heat lamp, it was the fag ash from the cigarette that was in Bob Rooney's mouth falling onto his leg. That's how antiquated Celtic were back in the day. But by the way, we still won the European Cup. So yeah, Rooney, I always wish him the best because he's firmly linked to that European winning side as well. But Scott Brown, all the best. I'll be looking at all your results. He's kind of steered them clear of the relegation zone as well, Colin. So he seems to be doing pretty well. We'll have a wee chat about the B team and also the women's team. But before we do that, we'll be talking about Saturday. And one of the things that really struck me about Saturday was Ange Postecoglou's comments, right? So he was talking about, it was actually a question that our very own Declan McConville posed to him after the game. But Ange has just got an absolute way with words. And what I was saying to you before about Bruni, you know, just having that control, getting the point across, but having, in Bruni's case, controlled aggression, but in Ange's case, he gets his point across so, so well. But he's always controlled, you know, he never loses it. Anyway, this was a slightly different answer he gave to Declan, who was talking obviously about, you know, it was a very sad day to begin with regards to the minute silence for Frank McGarvey, for example. And there was a quote that stood out, and Ange said, in a difficult time, we gave them a little bit of joy today. And he was talking about Frank McGarvey's kids who were at the game. And he just has a habit, Colin, he'd been able to hit the spot with his words, Ange Postecoglou. He also paid tribute to Kevin Bridges' father, Andy, who sadly passed away as well. And, you know, it just shows you the class of Ange. On the one hand, right, he's not afraid to sit there and name check Conor Goldson with regards to handballing the ball against Celtic and question the consistency of decisions. He's not scared to do that. But when it's required, he knows how to tap in to our psyche and into our emotional side of Celtic, Colin. And he's not doing it as one of these guys who's a fly-by-night. He's doing it because he understands it.
Mm-hmm. No, I think what it shows is his experience in football. He has come up against bigger, better journalists than anything Scotland can offer. If you want an example of that, all you have to do is go on and take a look at his sort of back and forth with the Australian press over the years, especially when he was the under-20s manager.
That was his mate as well, eh? That journalist was a pal of his, eh?
Yeah, still best pals now, apparently. He's very passionate about what he does, and you can tell he picks and chooses the right time to say what he wants to say. I thought he chose his words really well on Saturday. And I don't think at any point there's been something that he said that he thought, that's not befitting of a Celtic manager. I think he carries himself very well. And when you look across football, especially Scottish football, there's only certain managers that have managed to be able to do that over their time in Scotland. Some of them get caught up in the whirlwind of Scottish media and react to what the media want. I mean, some of the media just basically set them up for what they want to be printed in the back page of the papers the next day. Others have that sort of standoffish approach. Guys like Jack Ross. Jack Ross is one of the most standoffish managers you'll see. He just almost point blank refuses to answer questions. And I think that's how you see some of these managers don't have the relationships and they don't get the respect of the press. Whereas I think Ange will walk away at some point from Celtic going down as one of those guys who didn't stand for any of their nonsense, but they respected them because...
Universally respected.
Yeah, he always gave them something to work with. And he picks and chooses his words very carefully, so that always means that he comes across very well and it comes across well in the club.
Mobile phone companies say they offer home internet. But if their internet comes from a cell phone network, you should know. It's just phone internet, not home internet. Keep your home up to speed with Cox. Cox internet is faster and has more reliable download speeds than 5G home internet. Cox is the real home internet you're looking for. Based on Cox analysis of Ookla speed test intelligence data, Q3 2022, and Cox serviceable areas, visit cox.com/internet for details.
This week on The Marketer's Report, Patrizio Spagnoletto, Global Chief Marketing Officer, Direct-to-Consumer for Warner Brothers Discovery, weighs in on building trust.
Trust is a really hard thing to build and a really easy thing to destroy, and we have to be very respectful about that. Our partnership with iHeart has really helped us build that trust and that relationship with the on-air talent.
As the number one audio company, iHeartMedia gives you access to all, every audience, live conversations, trusted influencers, and the data you need to grow. Go to iHeartResults.com for more.
Absolutely. It's an interesting point you make there, talking about gaffers and, you know, things going awry and saying things and being in a mood and all that. And it's such an emotional and pressure-filled environment that you can understand it. But I was just thinking, you know, off the hoof there, I remember an interview that Ronnie Dyla gave in his second season where, you know, the fans, were the fans buying into Ronnie? I mean, I remember looking around and the place was half empty a lot of the time, Colin, in that second season. And we now know that there had been some sort of kind of revolt amongst senior players at the club. We know that now. And I remember an interview he gave, and I was comparing it at the time to when he first came in, and the pictures of him on that sunny summer's day where he looks absolutely, you know, healthy and trim and tanned and all that kind of stuff. And he spoke about philosophy and all this kind of, and it was great. And then, you know, 18 months later, I remember him, he was almost a broken man. And he was being questioned so much about the fact that the fans weren't buying into it, etc. He said something along the lines, and I'm paraphrasing, that, you know, if it's clear that they don't want me here, then I'll go elsewhere. Mm-hmm. And I remember thinking to myself, it's almost as if he's thrown the towel in. And, you know, if that's what he was thinking, Colin, you don't say it. And that's the point you were making. You go into the time of Rodgers and that interview where he's gone on about Terminado, talking about the club not matching his ambition, and you're thinking to yourself, you don't do that in a broadcast. You know what I mean? You don't use our club as a chess piece and an issue that you might have with Peter Lowell. And then Neil Lennon, obviously there was a few, I think, but the post-Dubai one and the Ferencvaros after the defeat, that you were in the studio after that game. Yeah. Those interviews, they just give too much away, don't they? Whereas I think Ange is far more controlled in his delivery, and he does get the point across. Now, loads of great comments coming in. The Killing Moon comes in to say, afternoon all, absolutely no worries about Juranovic rather anymore with Johnson in the door. Hope we can get a happy GG until the end of the season. If it goes and Kyogo gets injured, we are relying on an unknown. Well, he is an unknown, but what do we know about him? So, obviously, there was murmurings prior to the World Cup that we were going in for him, I think, at that time. Mm-hmm. Colin, transfer fee was about $2 million at that time. Yeah. Talking about $2 million. And he plays for Gyeongbuk Hyundai Motors. Obviously, my knowledge of that league isn't great, but he was the top goal scorer in the K-League last season. He's 24 years of age, and they're now talking $3 million. We'll need to pay $3 million, which is slightly more than the mains of the Bundesliga have offered. And again, though, it does strike me with his age. Yeah, it's a market that we don't know that well as fans. I guess, you know, Celtic haven't really shopped in that market. But I think it's a great deal anyway. I think it looks, it's got all the hallmarks, Colin, of another shrewd bit of business by Ange Postecoglou.
We were speaking earlier about someone having a good World Cup and it affecting their transfer fee. Well, as you said, talking before the World Cup of maybe a bid for around £2 million for this player. He goes on and scores twice against Ghana in the World Cup, and then suddenly he's a £3 million player now. £1 million is obviously, in terms of the transfer fees that we do nowadays, not a lot, but that's a sort of 50% increase that have been put onto his value just because of that one performance at the World Cup. So if you'd taken that into account of what you'd maybe valued Juranovic at beforehand, and then he's a World Cup semi-finalist, then you can kind of understand the frustration around where this fee comes at now.
Give me a fee. What do you reckon would be a reasonable fee for Juranovic?
If you didn't have any sort of clauses, if there's no sort of thing, I would say somewhere in the region of 10 to 12 million.
I'm going to say 15, right? And because my 10 to 12 million was before the World Cup. Mm. So, you know, if it works for other players, Colin, why doesn't it work for our player? But as you say, with that caveat, if there isn't a clause,
yeah,
and we don't know about that at this moment in time. And Jungle Lion comes in and says that it does look like that. And I think that's what we're, you know, obviously we're surmising as fans, it might come out later in the day that that was the case.
Yeah.
But yeah, I mean, from what I've seen, and most of that was in the World Cup on an international level, this looks like another bit of shrewd business by. But he is largely unknown. And what I think was meant by the commenter is, you're coming in, the Killing Moon, you're coming in to a completely different environment. And I think at the Gucci, different league, but, you know, change of culture, what I'm talking about here, has shown that it doesn't always work. Because when he came in, you know, he was actually more highly rated from the Japanese sources that we were talking to than some of the other Japanese players that came in.
I think the only thing with the Gucci is he had that experience before when he went to Leeds under Bielsa. Or was it just before Bielsa came in? I can't remember. But he'd kind of been here before. He'd sort of not really hit the ground running. He had his injury concerns. So I think the Gucci one, in hindsight, probably was a gamble. And it's not really paid off for us because of the way that others like Hitati have hit the ground running. Looking at Cho, as we said earlier, it's interesting because he's obviously now completed his military service, so we don't have to worry about that in the same way that we did when Dave came in, or Key. Just call me Dave.
I absolutely loved Key. I thought he was tremendous talent.
Yep, absolutely. But what was quite interesting doing a bit of research into Cho last night was that he started his career as a midfielder and then was moved further forward by one of his coaches, and then went on to become the J-League's top scorer. Sorry, not J-League, the K-League top scorer. So obviously whoever saw that in him should be rewarded for what he's done. But you think he scored something like 23 goals in 30-odd games. He's done really well at that Hyundai Motors team that you were mentioning.
Gyeongbuk.
That one. And he looked pretty good in the World Cup. So yeah, it is a bit of a gamble bringing someone like that in, as you say, especially if Kyogo gets injured. But you've also got the options like playing Maeda through the middle. We saw it last year, not necessarily particularly great, but playing guys like Abada through there. And then for me, I think it's time that we start to integrate some of the B team. I know we're looking at potentially them not being up at that level yet, but I think experience to first team football, especially if we can sort of build a gap in the league, would be something I'd like to see. Guys like Vata, obviously been on the bench, came off the other week. Joey Dawson scoring goals for fun in the lower league.
What's that, 6-3?
Yeah, he got a double in the Glasgow Derby at Celtic Park. He got a couple of goals against Open Goal the other week as well. Look, it's time for these guys to be thrown in at the deep end to see if they've got anything, and if they've not, then we move them on. So the likes of Boston Lowell, Rocco Vata, Joey Dawson, let's get them in to the first team. Let's see if they can even challenge for a spot, and then take it from there.
I'm glad you brought up the B team, because I had someone talking to me the other day there who was at the Rangers game, the B team, and I asked the question, which of the players, because I'm hearing a lot about certain players, Colin, but I don't go and watch the B team as often as I would like. Which of the players would come into the Celtic side? And he was not confident that many would, if any, at this stage. So even the higher rated players, he felt, weren't ready yet for you know, who are they going to replace is the question. And I think that is an issue, we've spoken about it before, that will only be resolved with the B team playing at a higher level. They are in the hunt for the league this season, but we know that won't result in promotion. And, you know, I've been looking at this and thinking, well, we're probably maybe even a decade behind when it comes to actually being able to dip into the B team and pull out a player who is actually ready for the first team. You're going to have anomalies. You're going to have guys like Ben Doak, who probably would have been able to, but obviously we know what happened there. But over the piece, you want to have a backup team, a B team, a coach team, what used to be a reserve team, and all its different guises. You want to have a backup team that every season I've got three or four players that can step into the first team squad, not right into the first team, but into that squad, Colin. And I don't think at the moment, simply because of the level they're playing at, that's going to be possible. And even if we win the league, it's not going to be possible next season. So I think, again, further reconstruction would be required, you know, whereby, is it ever going to be agreed that promotion would be a thing up to at least the championship?
I don't think so, but what we can continue to do is be successful as a first team, because being successful as a first team opens up the opportunity for the likes of the younger players to go on and compete at a European level, has the opportunity to get them invited to major tournaments across Europe. And we were speaking in the chat earlier on, Celtic have been invited down to the Premier League Invitational Under-23s tournament. I think they've got three or four games coming up in February. They were obviously part of the UEFA Youth League, which I went over and saw the game against Real Madrid. It's a fantastic wee stadium.
Dedication for you, Colin. Eh? Going over to Spain to watch the B team.
If you ever get a chance to see that stadium, by the way, it's a fantastic stadium.
What do they call it?
The Alfredo Di Stefano Stadium. It's where they played during COVID. Obviously, whilst the Bernabeu is still under reconstruction as well, I think they play some games there too. But it's fantastic. The setup there, they must have spent, in the essence, of £10 million on that stadium. It's unbelievable. But then I looked at some of the players that played in that game, and some of them really didn't look out of place. Guys like Lissouza, or Latoza, or however it's pronounced, I probably butchered that one, in midfield, who actually I thought had a good game against Rangers as well. You've got guys like Summers and even the captain that day, I think the boy McPherson. They're all very highly rated, but the more that they play against people of this level, the better they're going to become. I mean, if you can up your game to play against someone like Real Madrid, what would you rather play against, Real Madrid, or would you rather play against, without any sort of insult here, Trinent Juniors or Cumbernauld Colts? So it's maybe more important that these guys, yeah, they've got somewhere to play every Saturday. That's a good thing to have. But we should be putting them out on loan as well. We should be trying to get them into teams in the Championship, maybe even the Premiership, and just getting them out there and giving them some experience of proper men's football. If they can't come into our first team, then we've got to get them first team football somewhere. I think the B team thing is a good idea in the Lowland League, but only up to a certain age. I think once you hit 18, then you should be looking to play first team football somewhere else. I think it's a great thing for our under 18s to be a part of. Mm-hmm. And you take a look at some of the players that have played there and came through, and you're starting to get excited that likes of Rocco Vata, still 16, quite exciting. Ben Doak, obviously, before he left. But then when you hit that sort of age gap, when you're looking at players like Boston Law and Mackenzie Cass and players of that ilk, they need to take that step up after the 18 level, because they're just going to stagnate at that league.
Yeah, or leave. Or leave the club.
Yeah. And I think entirely. For the sort of the funding that we give the team and what we get back from it, I think over the last couple of years it's certainly not balanced itself out. But again, I'd like to see us just throw these guys in and say, look, this is it. This is your chance. You have been the best players of your age group. Are you going to make that step up in the way that Kieran Tierney was the third choice left back in the reserves at one point, and we threw him in just because the reserves were away and they were the only ones that was, he was the only one that was available, and he took his opportunity. The same way Dane Murray came in and impressed quite a few people when he was the only option that we had. So we give these guys an opportunity, and yeah, because maybe they don't stand out in the B team doesn't mean that they'll not stand out in the first team, but it's a case of giving them that chance. And I mean, games coming up against the likes of Morton, and no offence to Morton, I'm obviously a green-up boy myself, I hope that Morton do really well, but I'd like to see the likes of Vata, Dawson, Lowell, even just being given 20, 30 minutes against these teams to show that they can take that opportunity.
I know. And I was just thinking that you were saying give them a chance. Do we give them a chance? Does Stephen Welsh and Johnson, Mikey Johnson, and previously Anthony Rowson, are they treated differently because they've come through the ranks? Probably. You know, we've spoken about that as well. Yeah, it'll be interesting to see how that develops. And also, there is some news breaking on Twitter involving the Celtic women's team. One of their top talents, actually, Clarissa Larrissey, top goal scorer at the club. Mm-hmm. Double cup winner last season. She's actually left the building. So she's completed a move to Hacken. And it says here for an undisclosed fee, but our sources would suggest that it is a national record for a women's footballer. And yeah, that's a bit of a blow because she's a top player. But I think what we're going to find is very much what we're saying there as well, Colin. Once there's a ceiling on a talent, if you're playing women's football and the league isn't completely professional, you know, I think that, for example, if you're looking at your international, as she is, your Canadian internationalist, of course, you'll be wanting to play in a full pro league. And I think that comes into it in the women's game. I don't know what your thoughts are on that.
Now, Clarissa Larrissey was a fantastic striker for Celtic. She came in and I know there's some of the boys from Canada that are big Celtic fans. They were aware of her before she came over. And she took a bit of time to hit the ground running, but when she did, she came in. And we're talking about, I totally forgot the girl's name that was scoring goals for fun before she left as well. And they're talking about how she would be very difficult to replace. And Larrissey came in and done very, very well. You've also got the likes of Jacinta, who's carrying the team as well with her goals. Look, as you say, Scottish women's football is not at the level yet. Celtic and Rangers are both professional. Glasgow City are making that move to become professional. You've also got the likes of Hearts and Hibs, who are investing a lot of money into the teams as well. But there's always going to be that divide. There's always going to be people, and you can see it in the chat already, who are not interested in women's football. and they'll never be interested in women's football. And then you've got the ones that are willing to give it a go and willing to back it just to see how it goes. And it's always that case of, well, it's Celtic at the end of the day. It's going to need a lot of investment to get there. But you take a look at what happened down south, obviously England winning the Euros. I've seen crowds of 30, 40,000 at the Etihad to watch the Man City game. You see sort of sellout stadiums at some of the lower league teams. I think Man United had a crowd of about 40-odd thousand for their derby game against Man City. The only way we'll be able to attract the talent and to improve the standard of football is if we get that sort of investment. Because these teams down south, they can afford to pay probably similar wages to what we'd pay in the Championship in Scotland just now.
Yeah, and some of the Premier League teams as well, Colin. Yeah. And that is the difference. The gap is absolutely huge. I want to talk a wee bit, obviously, before we wrap up, because it's been a quick 50 minutes so far. Ian Laurie, we have a gaffer that's won a league from nowhere and 12 points clear, cut to 9 yesterday. Why question his transfers now? Let him do his work. Absolutely, we're not questioning him. We're just talking about them, sir. Peter Caloero, early today, 12:29. Aye, see, we do listen to feedback. Colin, we listen to the feedback of our loyal followers and listeners. I shouldn't call you loyal. Our devout followers and listeners, we listen to your feedback and we wanted to make sure that we were in early, even though I took Colin by surprise by throwing him right in. Money, 7 million is scandalous. I think it's scandalous for Juranovic. I think if Giakoumakis is going and that's what we get for him, I'll probably be happy with that. Paddy Lavery, Goldson has saved more shots than Barkas. Right. I'm going to start there then. Paddy, you've opened the floodgates. Right. So, Goldson, twice in a week, saves the ball against Celtic and then clear blatant handball against Dundee United, not penalised on either occasion. No VAR checks on either occasion either by the referee at the monitor. Now, the minute anybody speaks up, and I've been watching on social media with interest over the last week, since Monday of last week, the minute anybody mentions it, particularly if you're a Celtic fan, Colin, then you get shouted down. You get shouted down from all quarters. And I don't just mean the usual suspects on Twitter. I'm talking the media. You know, anything at all that you say in relation to, right, it's a poor decision, Rangers get them and we don't, straight away, you're called paranoid, you're called conspiracists, and I don't think this is either of the two, the situation that we're in at the moment. And I've said it before, and people might think that you're a moon howler and all this kind of stuff, right, because that's what they call you to try and discredit you, because that's what conspiracy is, isn't it? I mean, if somebody had, let's not get into some other conspiracies that turned out to be 100% correct, but anyway, conspiracies often is because there is something to conspire about. So with regards to my position on this, I think there's a pro-Rangers bias. And often it is an anti-Celtic bias. Now, people say, oh, that's cheating and that's corruption. No, it's not. It's bias, which is completely different. But what I would underline is the fact that in this country, when it comes to football, Colin, there has been cheating and there has been corruption and it has been under the SFA's watch. So if you say that this is pro-Rangers, which I believe it to be, history tells us that doesn't have to be far off the mark. A couple of examples, right? And I know that people in the comment section will be well aware of them, as will yourself, Colin. 1999, not a million years ago, 1999, after a three-year battle with the SFA, Jim Farry was relieved of his duties due to the fact that he had deliberately delayed the registration of George Cadet, which resulted in a missing six games. Fergus McCann wouldn't let it go. And it was done deliberately to prevent us from having a star striker in one particular game against Rangers in the Cup, but six games all in. Have a look at the league table and see how many points we lost the league by. Ask yourself, would George Cadet have scored a couple of goals to make those draws wins? Answer is probably yes. Fast forward to October 2010. Doogie Doogie, you'll remember. We're at Tannadice. Oh, yeah. Celtic get a penalty. Was it Gary Hooper taken down by the goalie? Yep. And the referee gives the penalty. He then consults his assistant referee, and there is this lie which develops, which says that it was the assistant referee that called him over, shouting Doogie Doogie in his earpiece. Didn't happen. of course. Stephen Craven admitted that. It was all a bunch of lies. And Hugh Dallas, not long afterwards, November 2010. And by the way, what I find interesting about that one, Colin, is I've heard this, oh, you want to pressurise the refs so they go on strike. That's not the way it happened. That's not the way it happened back then. Because you show me a Celtic statement at that time. You show me a statement that Celtic made at that time. It was like they just ate themselves alive because they knew that they were going down a blind alley with it. It did result in referee strike. It also resulted in McDonald resigning. He was Dougie McDonald, of course, the guy who was refereeing the game. In the following month, Hugh Dallas plus five others within the referees department resigned over offensive emails involving the Pope and child abuse. These guys are at the head of refereeing at the time, Colin. So when we're talking about pro-Rangers or anti-Celtic bias, I think that you've got plenty of examples to suggest, and this is not to mention DOS, EBT, side letters, five-way agreements, undeclared overdue payables to allow registrations in European football, all under the same SFA's watch. So I think as Celtic fans, we are allowed to question what's going on with regards to the decisions that are being made and also the implementation of VAR. And I think it's only right that Ange just called it out and the club are in dialogue with the SFA because it's a scandal at this moment.
Yeah, you can't disagree with anything that you just said there. What I do find interesting is that Celtic have kind of, certainly over the last couple of weeks, been a lot more vocal. It started with the players, and then Ange came out in the press conference, and then the next thing, Celtic started to go behind the scenes and started to speak to the SFA. Now, for me, there's two ways to look at this, right? Obviously, Celtic are calling it out, which is exactly what they should be doing. If they think something is incorrect, which we, I think we can all agree that the decisions that we've seen is incorrect, then you have to call it out. The other bit for me, though, is I think it's going to take more than just Celtic, Paul. I think you've got to try and get some sort of coalition with other teams in the league. Because, as you say, it's so easy for them to just turn around and say, oh, it's Celtic v Rangers, or it's Celtic.
What if that 2-0 defeat relegates Dundee United? What if at the end of the season, right, they're looking at that saying, because it was a critical time of the game, nothing each before half-time, Colin. Yep. Yeah, there was a bit of a collapse and there was an upsurge in rain. We know all that. But that was a pivotal moment of that game. And that, you know, that could have been one point that they got. And at the end of the season, if that club's relegated and people are made redundant and all that kind of stuff, the impact is huge. So you're right. Sometimes it needs to impact other clubs.
Yeah, I think it's going to take more than just Celtic to do this, to actually stand up for it. Now, the one team in Scotland that voted against the introduction of VAR is my home club, Greenock Morton, and they're taking great fact in the terrible decisions that are being made because they know they voted against it. I think if you looked at whether you had to continue the funding for VAR next season, how many teams would support it? I don't think there'd be that many that would be rushing in to back it. I think every team this year has come out and says that VAR has sort of been an introduction to Scottish football that wasn't welcome. It came in at the wrong time of the season for me. The fact that you bring it in halfway through a season, when have you ever done something like that before? You're totally changing the rule books from what was at the start of the season to what it is now. This set of referees, as you say, I think there's definitely a bias in there. Mm-hmm. And I don't think that they are capable enough of holding that sort of power with the equipment. I mean, you saw John Beaton last week saying, I'm not making
it's
that.
Not, it's not my call. It's not up to me. Call. Something like that, yeah.
Right, and at the
he's
end
the
of
ref.
The day, if he's the referee, it's always meant to be that the referee's word's final. And if he's, I'm trying to keep it clean here, if he's backing out of that decision, that's not the word I wanted to say, then it tells you that how can you trust that the referee's decision's final? I think, and if you're going to bring VAR into Scotland, right, and I said it last week as well, you need a team from outside that have got the experience of having VAR before. Now, everybody makes mistakes with VAR at the start. We understand that. It's difficult at times to work it out, but these things can be resolved. You saw it working very, very well. It works well at the World Cup. It worked well. It now seems to work well down in England. There's still a couple of things that are touch and go. But you need the experience.
It could be a system that's already working. I totally agree with you. It could be remote. Doesn't have to be a van parked outside.
You need these people with the experience to come up and say, look, this is how you actually do it. And this is a penalty and that's not a penalty. This is a decision that you can look at. This isn't a decision you can look at. Go to the screen, understand the screen a bit better, understand what you're actually watching. If you're taking more than three looks at it, come away again, because the more you look at something, the more you're actually going to see something. You've got to give it as much as you would have gave it in real life. So I don't think these referees were ready for it, right? I'm not saying every referee in Scotland's biased. There's certainly ones that we know out there that show a favouring to one team or another. But there is definitely not every single one of them. I mean, that's impossible. But they're just not ready for this equipment, Paul. They're not ready for VAR. I said this at the time. I was not looking forward to the introduction of VAR because it's not about the system itself. VAR is not the problem. It's the people that are implementing and running the system that are the problem. And that doesn't change whether you spend £10 million on VAR, whether you spend £1 million on VAR. It makes no difference. No difference at all.
It's like giving me a video file and saying, go and edit that and put it on the channel. That's exactly what I did last night with an interview with Fran Alonso. It's my first effort. Go and have a look. And whilst you're on there, subscribe to the channel and give this wee video a link. We used to laugh on here, Colin, about there was this feature every week in the Shoot magazine. I love Shoot, Match, Roy the Rovers, probably all a wee bit before your time, Colin, and the Celtic View, of course, as well as Not the View. And there was this section called You're the Ref, and it would give you a scenario, and then it would give you the options. And Not the View parodied it. And the option four or D was always book Paul Elliott because he got booked 16 times in a season. And now you're the Ref's Not the View parody would be option D, penalty to Rangers. You know what I mean? It always would be every single time an option. Ange called it out, says Tom Mack, when he said the only two saves that day were Connor Goldson and Joe Hart. He did, and he called it out pretty well. Listen, there's loads more to talk about, but that is our hour up, Colin Watt. The comments have been very, very busy. If you haven't done so already, I was checking this morning, we're about 15 away from 20,400 subscribers on the YouTube channel. It does help us if you subscribe. It allows us to obviously grow the channel, and if we can grow the channel, we can do a lot more with it. Some of that will be on a live stage, and we are going to be live with Danny McGrain in March in Glasgow at Gracie's. Ticket link is under the video as well. All that's left for me to say, Colin Watt, thank you once again for joining me on A Celtic State of Mind.
Mobile phone companies say they offer home internet. But if their internet comes from a cell phone network, you should know. It's just phone internet, not home internet. Keep your home up to speed with Cox. Cox internet is faster and has more reliable download speeds than 5G home internet. Cox is the real home internet you're looking for. Based on Cox analysis of Ookla speed test intelligence data, Q3 2022, and Cox serviceable areas, visit cox.com/internet for details.
It's the Marketer's Report. This week, Patrizia Spagnoletto, Global Chief Marketing Officer, Direct-to-Consumer for Warner Brothers Discovery, weighs in on the difficult task of building and retaining consumer trust.
Trust is a really hard thing to build and a really easy thing to destroy, and we have to be very respectful about that. our partnership with iHeart has really helped us build that trust and that relationship with the on-air talent. The best thing for us to do is to build a relationship with our consumers. And if those consumers have a relationship with the DJs that are on air, then we want to build on that. House of the Dragon, which was one of our most successful, if not the most successful campaign we've ever done for a show, audio was a core part of that.
As the number one audio company, iHeartMedia gives you access to all. Every audience, live conversations, trusted influencers, and the insights and data you need to grow. Not just a media company, iHeartMedia is your access company. Go to iHeartResults.com for more.
Sports Social Podcast Network. 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 Sports Social Podcast Network.
With Lucky Land Slots, you can get lucky just about anywhere.
Dearly beloved, we are gathered here today to... Has anyone seen the bride and groom?
Sorry, sorry, we're here. We were getting lucky in the limo and we lost track of time.
No, Lucky Land Casino, with cash prizes that add up quicker than a guest registry.
In that case, I pronounce you lucky.
Play for free at LuckyLandSlots.com. Daily bonuses are waiting. No purchase necessary. Void where prohibited by law. 18 plus. Terms and conditions apply. See website for details.